fans, wherever you may be, welcome inside the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alvstead, and featuring Seahawks sports writer and football analyst, Heath Myers.
Hey, Hawks fans, welcome back to another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Alvstead, here, sitting here as always with Keith Myers. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
I'm good. It's been an interesting couple of weeks up here in the Pacific Northwest. We've gone from super hot to thunderstorms and apparently a tornado not too far from here. And then, it's just been all over the place. But you know what? It's summer, and that is always a good thing because that means there's more stuff to do.
That's crazy. I kind of miss that sort of weather up there. It's been literally, Keith, I kid you not, it's kind of boring here in the desert in as far as weather goes. Now, if you love blue sky and you like sun and heat, this is definitely the place you want to be, because every day I look outside and it's the same every single day. Like since March, it hasn't changed other than just the temperature, because it's the same blue sky every day. And it's I kind of miss the change, the clouds and the thunder and the and then it's really nice. And then it's crazy because all the hail just stripped all the flowers out of your entire yard. You know, stuff like that is pretty exciting. So,
yeah, when I lived down there, honestly, I was like, so I'm tired of blue sky and sun. Can we get a cloud or some rain?
Yeah.
Just something to change it. And I would say that, and then I'd be like, people are going to think I'm insane for saying those words out loud.
Well, I know. It is kind of interesting. And it's all about perspective and what you're used to and how much of it you get. So this week's show, Keith, we're going into position group show number four.
Last one.
This one is safeties and corners. And it's a nice group. It's a broad group. There's a lot of diversity in the group. There's a lot of scheme diversity type players now on the roster, which is kind of interesting to me. It's kind of a new development. If you know, there have been scheme diverse players over a long period of time in the NFL and specific to the Seahawks. But this team and the way the league is positioning itself now is the way it plays the game is kind of moving in that direction where you get players on a roster that kind of do more than one thing. And that's a little different even from Pete Carroll when he first came in 2010, 2011, where they would get guys that did special jobs and they would find players that would do one thing really well. And then he would kind of put those guys in a position to be successful in that way. But now guys are like, they play two, three, four positions and you know, it's kind of crazy. So
well,
before we get in,
go ahead. I was going to say just, for our listeners, the best example of that would have been Red Bryant, right? Because this is a 330-pound defensive tackle that never really did anything in the NFL. It looked like he was probably starting to wash out. And what did Pete Carroll do? He moved him to defensive end, where he could line up against an offensive tackle that's not used to dealing with guys that big, and let him just be an edge setter and just a big guy that mauled defensive tackles. And it was because there was something that he, you know, there's an aspect of that, his ability to two gap that Pete Carroll really liked. And so they created the elephant role opposite the Leo for him. And then when they decided to move on from him, and because they had Michael Bennett sitting there ready to be a starter, they were like, you know, we don't need that elephant anymore. We're going to go with a more traditional strong side defensive end rather than a two gap guy. And they changed the role to take advantage of Michael Bennett's skills. So that's the type of thing that you and I were just talking about. And so that's what they did. Yeah. Is they would go and find players that would do that kind of stuff and then put them in a role. And now it feels more like they're like, okay, we want to do a bunch of different things. Let's go get someone who can do a bunch of different things and be scheme diverse. Yeah.
Well, you look at Collier and Green, mm-hmm. You know, this is a good example. They want to start them out at the 5-tech, but they'll move them inside to the 3-tech. They could go out to it all the way outside and line up on the very end. They can drop back into coverage if they had to. So there's a lot of roles that you're now playing. You'd never ask Red Bryant to drop back into coverage. I mean, that would just never happen. So, and then you look at the safeties. We drafted Amadi. The guy could play, you know, free safety, strong safety. He can play in the slot. He can play a regular outside corner if he had to in a pinch. He can play linebacker, a weak side linebacker, you know, just depending on how your alignments are on the defense. So just stuff like that just fascinates me. Bradley McDougald, same guy we'll talk about in a little bit, a guy that can play strong safety and free safety, can come up and cover in the slot. You could do that with a number of different players on the roster now, and I just think it's fascinating. Before I get started on the position group conversation, Keith and I were just kind of planning out a couple, two, three shows, the next three that we're going to do after this show. And so I wanted to go over those just a little bit. On the 10th, we'll be recording again, and we're going to do kind of a general, if we were the commissioner of the NFL, how would we run the league? What changes would we make? How would it impact the Seahawks? How would Pete Carroll and John Schneider kind of figure that out? And what would they advocate for? All that kind of stuff. It'll be a fun show. We'll talk just general NFL stuff, CBA, rule changes, salary cap, safety in the NFL, instant replay. We'll spend some time on that. Like, how would we like to see instant replay used? What kind of plays would we use it on? Player conduct, all that kind of stuff. You know, for those that are interested in that sort of stuff, it'll be a great show. For those that are not, hang in there. It'll be fun. We'll talk about some fun stuff too. The show after that is the like pinnacle show of the summer for us in the off season is the question and answer beer show. Keith will come to the show fully prepared with like three or four different handcrafted home brews that he's actually brewed, and he'll be tasting those, and we'll kind of get a flavor for what he's got there in his own house. And I'm gonna bring like three or four microbrews that are commercially available on my side, and we'll just kind of compare those, and we'll answer some questions. And then the 24th is right on the eve of training camp, and we will have our annual training camp preview show, what we're watching for, who do we want to see, all that kind of fun stuff. That'll be a show that you just definitely don't want to miss. So we've got some good shows planned for the dog days of summer, and we'll hope you stay with us for those. So before we start off on a position group, Keith, you got anything you want to talk about, anything you want to cover?
No, the only thing that came up this week, I mean, literally we're in that time where there's just no NFL coverage out there. We had Tyler Lockett getting canceled on an Airbnb because he was, quote, too rich. And he was talking about how weird that experience was. And then, of course, Madden came out with their ratings for rookies, and for those of you that play that, you probably care. For everyone else, you don't. So I just didn't think it was something that was worthwhile getting talking about. But that's literally the only things that have happened in
the
Seahawk
good news,
world
Keith. The good news is there is no news.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really, if you really look at it in a positive way, that you don't want to have a lot of news right now going on with any Seahawks type players. Now that Tyler Lockett thing's kind of an interesting thing, and we could go off on that for a little while, but nobody's making any bad news, and that's really the important thing this time of the year.
Yep, this is the time of year where the bulk of the NFL news in the past has always been, hey, this player got arrested, or hey, this player got arrested.
Or Malik McDowell, you know, crushes his skull in an ATV accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's always been, you know, those kind of stories, and we don't want those stories to be, we don't want to be covering them. Let's just be honest. We don't want to cover those stories. So we're glad they're not there.
Yep. So, hey, I did want to mention one thing. Like, I'm a Blazer fan. Like, I like Blazer basketball. I moved to the Portland area from the Seattle area in the mid 80s after college, and been following the Blazers ever since. I followed the Sonics as well when the Sonics were there, and the Huskies, and you know, it took me some time to kind of migrate my fandom over to the Portland teams, but I did. And so I've been a Blazer guy. And there's a lot of folks in Seattle that are kind of adopted the Blazers, even if it's for a short period of time until they get the Sonics back. But I thought what the Blazers did here this last week in the draft and then in free agency really kind of blew my mind. I wasn't expecting so much from Neil O'Shea, and he kind of did a good job on molding that team for this coming season, considering he didn't have a lot to work with. Keith, do you follow the Blazers at all, and what do you think about that?
No, I don't. I was a Sonics fan, and I kind of stopped following the NBA when the Sonics left.
The only little bit that I've done is
I was in Pullman when I've gone back to Pullman, not as a student, but as someone who lived there when my wife was a student in her vet school. And so during that time was when Klay Thompson and Tony Bennett was the coach. Klay Thompson was one of the star players. And those teams that were actually good and not terrible, which has been Coug basketball forever. And so now that Klay Thompson's in the NBA, I followed just a little bit just to kind of keep track of him and what he's done. But for the most part, no, I'm not in that loop.
I had a nice 10-15 minute conversation with Michael Thompson, his dad. This is back in the late 80s, I think. I was at a Starbucks in Lake Oswego. Michael Thompson comes in. He's standing right in front of me. I'm right next to him. The line's like, you know, 7-8 people long. We just struck up a conversation. He had been, a Portland Trailblazer for a little while there, and he has a home there in Oregon. So that was interesting. But I don't know. I get it. I get the fact that a lot of people just walked away. I really do. It was a disgusting situation. And as a Blazer fan and a Sonic fan, there's nothing more than I would want than to have the Sonics have a team back and have the rivalry back there. The I-5 rivalry the team had, it was one of the special rivalries in the NFL, or not in the NFL, in the NBA. And they took that away. It sucks. So I get it. So we don't have to talk about that anymore. let's go into position groups, safety groups. First of all, I have a question for you, Keith. So we've done defensive tackles, defensive ends, linebackers. Now we're going to talk about safeties and corners. We're going to finish up the defense. Before we get started, if you had to rank the position groups in order of strength on this defense, or maybe we should save this for the very end of the podcast, but I want to know up front, like, how you would view the strength of this defense and the weakness.
I think the back end is currently the weakness. I mean, we know the team had three Hall of Fame players in the Legion of Boom, and all of them are gone, and they've all been replaced, kind of inadequately. And I think that the back end here of the defense is the weakness of the defense. The defensive line, I think, is young and unproven, but super talented. And the linebacker core might be the best in the NFL. Now that they've got Kendricks in the fold and a couple of really promising young rookies as backups, and you're going to see that group's going to be five deep of really good players. The back end here, I mean, it's just question mark, question mark, question mark. And Trey Flowers.
And unproven.
Yeah. And then Trey Flowers. So you have Trey Flowers, who is just phenomenal as a rookie. And then everyone else is just there. So, in fact, maybe that's where we should start, is just, at cornerback right there with Trey Flowers, because Flowers he was a rookie last year and didn't have he was a safety in college who was a fifth round pick, making the transition to cornerback, wasn't supposed to start, but both the guys in front of him got hurt in preseason. And so, okay, they're going to throw him out there. And we were expecting him to be bad. And the first couple weeks were a little, I don't say they were rough, but he gave up a couple big plays and he mistimed a couple things and ended up with a penalty. But you could see he was in position. The talent was there. He's just getting used to it. And then after that, he would just shut people down. He was the best player in the secondary after Earl Thomas got hurt. And it was,
it was evident.
Yeah.
It was totally evident. You know what? It's crazy how the NFL works, Keith. So this time last year, like 365 days ago, you and I were talking about Byron Maxwell and Dante Johnson as our cornerbacks, in addition to Griffin, that we're going to play all the time. Those were the three guys that were going to be part of a rotation that were going to take care of stuff. And Trey Flowers was like not even on the radar yet because he had yet to make the transformation. He talked about making the transformation in mini camps and so forth, but we had yet to have training camp and go through that process with Trey Flowers. He literally wasn't, we were talking about him like on a position group show, but there was nothing to say yet because we didn't even hardly look at him in the draft. He was one of those guys that was completely an afterthought, and all, you know, he ends up starting on day one and has 67 tackles, 6 pass defenses, 3 forced fumbles, allowed a passer rating of 51.4 in short yardage situations, second in the NFL. You know, in addition, I mean, those 67 tackles is pretty amazing. Coming up from a cornerback, because we were used to Richard Sherman being able to do that. And to find another guy, a Trey Flowers, that was a physical guy, 6'3", 205, 210 pounds, at a cornerback spot, doing the similar things that we saw Richard Sherman do in his rookie season, come up and really hit people and wrap people up, make tackles, solid tackles, better than anyone else in that secondary, other than maybe Bradley McDougald, who's a really sound tackler. That was really eye-opening and nice. Mm-hmm. And then you saw a guy like Shaq Griffin take a step back last year. And so Trey Flowers did come up and kind of take over as being kind of our premier cornerback going forward. And I don't even know really, I mean, he's definitely got some room to grow, and I don't want to discount anything Trey Flowers is doing, because I think he's going to be there for quite a while. But it does concern me as I migrate towards Griffin, like, what's going on there? And I'm interested to hear your take on like what kind of season Griffin had, what you think happened, and where you think he's going.
Well, I think that Griffin's taking having a bad year and taking a step back, I think that's overstated if you're really kind of like watching the opinion on him. Yeah, he didn't have a great year, but
Griffin was ranked by Pro Football Focus as the 111th cornerback out of 112 graded.
Yeah,
with an overall grade of 77.2 in 2017, his grade was like 50.7. Last year.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that what happened last year was that he was in a position where he was like, okay, you're the number one guy, go be, and go be Richard Sherman. And he's not Richard Sherman. He's a completely different kind of cornerback. And he was trying to do things that aren't him. And he was trying to, make the big play. He was freelancing a little bit, leaving his guy to go.
I think he felt the loss of Earl Thomas the most in that defense.
I don't know, because the worst part of his season was when Earl Thomas was in there.
Yeah, but it didn't get any better when he left. I think that you mentioned that he was out of position a little bit. Yeah. You just mentioned that he was out of position. I think one of the reasons that he was out of position, that he was switching to another side that he played from his rookie year, switched over to that Richard Sherman spot on the left. But I think not having Thomas back there was his safety blanket, where he could rely on somebody to give that extra step deep to. He knew that Thomas was going to be there.
Yeah.
Like that was just the thing, right? And after Thomas left, I don't think he had confidence in trusting the defense.
Yeah.
And so he hedged a little bit more than he did.
And I think that's it. It's like, well, because if you think about his rookie year, Thomas had gotten hurt too. And so he, he played without that,
true.
And did fine. I do think it had more to do with a situation where where it was just, he was trying to do too much. He was trying to do all the little things that he would see Sherman do, like bait quarterbacks into throwing the ball in his direction so that way he could get an interception, rather than just playing sound football. And he was just trying to be a guy he's not, a different kind of player. And he was also not, I like your point about not trusting the defense, because I think that was part of the reason why he was getting himself out of position too, is that he was like, you know, if he covers his guy and goes where, you know, in there, well, that just leaves a big hole. And he didn't trust, yes. He didn't trust Tedrick Thompson to fill that hole, yeah, like he's supposed to. So yeah, he would leave his guy and drift back towards that hole. And his guy would catch the ball. And so there was a lot of that. Then he got hurt. He had an ankle injury around midseason, and that didn't help. And then down the stretch, the last three, four games, he was back to playing, you know, kind of as we saw him as his rookie year. He played better.
True. He did end the season on a high note.
Yeah. His performance in the playoffs.
But, he allowed 100.4 passer rating, 780 yards and 7 TDs. Which is, it's tough. It was tough to watch, but okay. So let's look forward. So this year, Griffin has said, that he had gained too much weight last year. So he's lost 12 pounds to mm-hmm. quote unquote, get faster this year, to increase his playing, quickness. He's still got a lot of upside, Keith. I mean, he's 23 years old, 6'1", 181 pounds. So when he was drafted, the expectation was, and we'd had this expectation built up over a number of years, that our secondary was premier, and no matter who we drafted, they would come in, and he did a good enough job in this rookie season where the upside was there. Our expectation level was like, well, he's going to turn out like all the other starting corners that Pete Carroll's had. Now do our expectations need to be reined in a little bit? And is just being an average corner for Griffin good enough in this defense, or do we need him to be top 10?
I mean, he doesn't need to be top 10, but it would be nice if he was top 20. I think that we did have probably a little too high of expectations, but his rookie year is what we based those expectations on. And he was, during his rookie year, like there was all this talk about, you know, the Seahawks waited to the third round to get a cornerback when there were these really good, potentially really good ones available early. And then he was the best cornerback of that rookie class. But he was better than the guys that were drafted in the first round. And for him last year to be, you know, bad at times, average at times.
Well, I got the obvious question. What's the one thing that changed between his rookie year and his second year?
He moved to the other side, and Richard
Sherman moved to the other side.
And Richard Sherman, it was gone. And that really right. has a lot to do with it.
So what can we expect going forward? Now the team isn't going to move him back. Trey Flowers did a great job on the other side. Although I would argue possibly that Trey Flowers moving to the left side and Griffin moving back to his rookie year side might be the thing in the that makes the difference. I don't know that for sure because I'm not there. I'm not a coach. I'm not looking at them every day. They say they want to stay with what they've got. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think that for the simplicity of it, just leave them where they are and let them continue to develop there. I think for within the scheme and the way that it works, I wouldn't mind seeing a swap just because of Trey Flowers' tackling ability. One of the things that we saw when it was Richard Sherman over there on the right side is that the way that all of the alignment stuff goes when they put people in motion or whatever is that they would run people away from Richard Sherman's side and line up basically everyone on the other side of the field, which would give Richard Sherman an area out there that was uncovered, essentially making him a linebacker. And then they'd run at him and they would do that and it wouldn't go anywhere because Sherman was such a good tackler. He was so good over there at that kind of stuff. And so that didn't work. And so then they had other teams went away from it and do other things. But that's kind of the thing is when you got a dominant corner, you know, you find a way to turn him into a tackler rather than a cover person. And Sherman was able to beat that. Because he was,
and it's not gonna get any better for Griffin in that respect this year.
It's not.
He dropped 12 pounds. I mean, when you drop 12 pounds, you're down into the 180 range now. Yep. So he's 6'1", 181 coming into this training camp.
Yeah,
that's significant.
And so, when you do that, it's just Flowers' tackling ability, his you know history as a safety. I'd love to see him over there in that role because what that would do is that would put Griffin on the far side where typically there's a slot cornerback over there too, or the strong safety comes up to cover the tight end on that side. And so you've got another body. It's not just here, you're a cornerback, go play linebacker because of the offensive set. And I think that you have the ability to do that better. And maybe they just swap things a little bit. And so you leave them in their current spot, but then you have the slot corner over on Griffin's side, or the, you know, and that kind of stuff. So
or Flowers follows the best receiver or whatever
it is. Yeah. And maybe that's what they get to by midseason. It's also, you know, so as far as all of that, it's all scheme, and I wouldn't mind seeing the change, but at the same time, you've got two very young players, one with 1 year experience, yes, one with two. Sure. The player with two has already had to make that change and learn a bunch of stuff, and, you know, so they want to leave him in there where they were, let him learn, let him, you know, get used to it. And I think that might be the best thing for him, just for the continuity and allowing them to just focus on getting better.
And there's no guarantee that Flowers would be successful on another side, or more successful, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. So there's a lot of merit to leaving things the way they are. But Griffin does need to have a step-up year. I mean, if he has a year like he had last year, his job's in jeopardy.
If he has a year like he had last year, he won't be the starter by the end of the year.
Let's talk about that.
Because I think there's someone behind him ready to take a spot. And as it is, I've always said that Griffin projected as a slot corner when he got drafted. He was a guy that projected as a
slot. He's not as twitchy. I get it.
He was. I get that. He was that twitchy in college and stuff. And so they put him on the outside because they kind of had to. And he stepped up and showed he could do the job. And you're like, whoa, this guy, you know, is better than we thought he was going to be. But he's kind of projects to be that slot corner, to be Justin Coleman, who, you know, the guy that's been there the last couple of years. And the third guy on this team, as far at corner, is Akeem King, who last year, you know, was on the team, played some special teams, didn't get in the game much, and then there were some injuries, and he had to
put... Yeah, Trey Flowers was out for a couple times last year. Not a lot, but a couple yep. occasions, and he did really
and
well.
And Akeem King came in and really showed that he belonged. And then in probably the most important game of the season last year, which was that late season game against Kansas City, where the Chiefs were looking like they were the team to beat in the NFL. Yeah. And the Seahawks were, you know, stumbling along, trying to get into playoff position, and
needed that win.
They needed that win absolutely, like, terribly, like they just needed it. And they brought in Akeem King as a third corner / third safety and asked him to cover Travis Kelce, the tight end, who is probably the best tight end in the NFL right now. And he shut him down. Like, it was it was just absolutely, I was floored.
Kelce had come in with over, you know, almost 1,100 yards receiving and 10 touchdowns and a whole bunch of other, you know, attributes that make him almost impossible to stop. And King did the best job that you could ask any corner, any safety to do on a tight end.
Yeah. And so, he just, his play last year really showed that he belongs. And so,
right. So that, but that's a, okay. So I'm going to stop you right there. So Akeem King, I totally agree. He's got all the attributes, runs fast. He's a 4.45 40 guy, 6'1", almost 6'2", 215 pounds since fourth season. And that is the limited version we have of Akeem King. Like, literally, he's been a special teams guy or a practice squad guy his entire life until the second half of last season, where he actually got some time to get on the field. So he showed out for those limited opportunities. And now the team looks to possibly be giving King a much larger role this year. But and everyone's talking about him as being kind of a slot nickel corner guy. But that's not really where his prototype is as far as his skill set is concerned. Now, I'm sure that he could play some slot and play some larger slot receivers or some tight ends and all that kind of stuff from that position. But he's more of an outside guy, a guy like Griffin, a guy like Trey Flowers.
And that's the reason why.
How do you think? What do you think?
Well, the reason why I brought up Akeem as part of the Griffin conversation was because it is going to be matchup driven. He's going to be, if he's going to be the nickel, he's going to be the third guy. That doesn't mean he's going to be the slot. Now, if the opposing team is a team with a big slot, yeah, then King is going to be there. Or if the opposing team is someone with, a Travis Kelce type, big tight end receiving threat, then Akeem King's going to be the nickel on the inside, the slot guy. The other thing that they could do, though, is what they used to do with now I'm just losing people, losing names. But what they used to do with the guy that went to
I can't mention every corner we've ever had. Sorry, no, Coleman.
Before that, the guy that Coleman replaced.
Now you're asking me to think on the fly. I haven't had enough coffee this morning, Keith. Sorry.
So this was a guy that what they did is he started on the outside, and then when the team would move to the nickel, he'd slide in, and another guy would come in on the outside, and so they would, they would do that against teams with the smaller,
like Simon.
Yeah. Thurald Simon was the guy who came in on the outside and moved whoever it is, his name I can't come up with. Jeremy Lain. There we go. Finally. Jeremy Lain was starting, he would start on the outside. And then when Thurald Simon would come in, in the nickel situations, Thurald Simon would come in on the outside, push Jeremy Lain into the slot. I see this is a situation where... And it'll be matchup driven, right? A team with a smaller, quicker slot receiver, you'll see Griffin on them with Akeem King on the outside. Team with a big slot or a big tight end as their slot presence, you'll see Akeem King on the inside. Griffin will stay wide. So I think that's kind of what we're looking at this year.
So there's a couple other names that are really interesting. One in particular in that kind of slot corner role for the Seahawks that could even push Griffin there because he's just a natural slot kind of corner would be Kalen Reed. 5'11", 198, runs a 4.38 40, so just as fast as Griffin. But he's kind of built in that role, a little bit more twitchy. Signed to the practice squad in 2018. We tendered him as an exclusive rights free agent. He's got a 41.5 vertical. He does have the ideal traits to be the slot guy in Seattle. And that's the upside. And so we mentioned early in the show that this was kind of the weak link on the defense, but there is some upside. I mean, there are some young guys here that have ability. We just haven't seen it on the field yet, but, Kalen Reed, Coach Pete Carroll is really high on this guy.
Yeah, he is, and we haven't seen him, so we don't really know what he is and what he's got. But he's a guy that looks like he deserves a chance at a role. And there's a bunch of guys that are. And what we're going to do is everybody we're going to talk about here after those top three are all these different guys that we need one or two of them to pan out and be good enough to make the roster and be a role player. Athletically, Kalen Reed is one of those that you would say he should do it. Now, there's a difference between being an athlete and being a football player, especially at a position like cornerback where you have to actually cover and, a lot of it's footwork and that kind of stuff. And we'll see. I haven't seen him, so I don't know. I know Pete Carroll likes him. He is one of the guys that has a chance. He's going to be given every chance in order to make the team and be that backup slot and maybe push the other guys. But he's one of many and they need two, right?
Well, let's talk about the list. So we've got Jeremy Boykins, 6'2", 183 out of UCF, mm-hmm. practice squad player in 2018. He's going to battle for that nickel spot as well. So they've got two or three guys in there. They're going to battle for that spot. In addition to Griffin, who's not battling for the spot, but you're saying scheme-wise could come into that spot. Might that diversity with Griffin might push some of these guys off the roster? They might elect to keep some bigger corners, outside corners instead. So we'll see.
Interesting. Which you said he played for UCF, which means he played with the Griffin brothers.
That's correct.
In college. And so it's one of those things where it's like, you don't think of, you know, the University of Central Florida as a pipeline.
Defensive into back factory.
Into the NFL, but you've got, now Boykin here with the Seahawks, trying to make the team. You got Griffin, who's a starter, and you got the other Griffin who is going to bounce around between, five different positions. It's an interesting makeup there with UCF guys.
So a couple of guys that are veteran guys, Nico Thorpe has been around the team for a while, 6'2", 210 pounds, seventh season. It's kind of surprised me, 29 years old. And for guys that are special teams guys, special teams captain in 2018, he had played in 12 games, got hurt, five tackles, fumble recovery. Nico Thorpe, a guy like Nico Thorpe is getting into that pocket where he's 29 years old, seven seasons. He's getting expensive now because of the veteran minimum for a guy like that. This could be a season where Nico Thorpe gets pushed off the roster, depending on a few things at the safety position and so forth and special teams overall. What are your thoughts on Nico Thorpe?
Nico Thorpe has been a guy who he's listed at cornerback. Technically, he can play cornerback. When he's played cornerback, it's been mixed, mostly not good. Although there was a point 2 years ago late in the season where they had to play him a little bit. And he did reasonably okay, but last season when he had to play, it looked bad. He's there entirely for special teams. He is not being counted on as a defensive player. He's being counted on as a special teams player. And, he is therefore the guy that you put on there as the sixth cornerback, that really means there's five cornerbacks, and he's listed there, but he's a special teams player.
So what do you think about his age and his recent injury history and just the NFL catching up to him?
I think we're in a point where we are at that point in his career. And he's going to be a guy that this is probably, he's getting close. I mean, you don't see guys that can't play in their natural position. They're only a special teamer. Get into their 30s in the NFL. They don't. Maybe if you have an elite kick returner, you can see that a little bit. But the gunners and that kind of stuff, that's a position where teams try and stay young. They try and stay fast
and cheap.
And Thorpe's getting into that age where it's going to be hard. I'm thinking that if he stays healthy through training camp, this is probably his last year with Seattle. Because at some point they're gonna need younger guys, cheaper guys, and guys that are better at their natural position.
So the next guy is the only free agent signing that we brought into the cornerback position, Jamar Taylor. Mm-hmm. He's got a bad rap out there of being an also-ran and so forth and so on. That's fine. 28 years old, sixth year. So he's been around, 5'11", 192 pounds, signed a one-year deal in May. So he waited around, went through the process. Nobody was really giving them anything. We brought him on. Second rounder in 2013, though. He's got some scheme diversity. He can play outside. He can play up at the line. He can play in the slot, out wide. His best year was 2016, though. And he's been bad the last couple of years. Jamar Taylor, why'd they bring him in? What do you think they want him to be? And does he make the team?
So they brought him in because they knew they didn't have a slot guy at the time. They had Akeem King, who is an outside guy that they're going to have. They want to try at the slot, and they're going to do the rotation stuff we talked about earlier. But they didn't have that true slot, and they just lost Justin Coleman.
Right.
And so they were,
and the only other guy was Kalen Reed, who we talked about, who doesn't have any experience yet in the NFL.
And so they're like, okay, they wanted to go get a guy, a vet, someone that they could bring in. And at least what they would do is they'd give the young guys, a player to watch, someone who knew the job, knew the position. So they weren't figuring it out, as they went. They would have someone, kind of that veteran, not, I don't want to say a leader or mentor, but at least a guy that knows the job and is doing the job. And so they can, they have that like model to kind of watch and help them learn. I don't think Taylor makes the roster. I really don't, just because I don't think he's that good. And
he could be the fifth guy, and he could be the guy too. If there's any injuries, he could be, he could make the team.
True. But here's the deal.
Cause we've got, hold on. We've got Griffin, Flowers, King, Reed, and Nico Thorpe, Jeremy Boykins. You've got Simeon Thomas, a couple other undrafted rookies that we can talk a second about. That's it, that on the roster so far. I mean, it's either Jamar Taylor or we cut Taylor and we probably bring somebody else in that's been cut off another roster, possibly.
Yeah, and the thing with Taylor is if you're going to be the fifth or sixth cornerback on a team, you better be a special teams player.
Right.
And
a 28-year-old Jamar Taylor may not be that guy, especially he's only 192 pounds. Yeah. I mean, what is he going to do?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be, he's going to have to be a gunner and put in the work out there. And that's usually, you know, that's a Nico Thorpe or a player.
Gotta be a little bit more physical than Jamar Taylor is.
Yep. And so, yeah, you have a few players like Thorpe who will, who are vets that'll do it, but mostly it's, you know, you need the young, hungry guys that are willing to put,
yes,
to put in the right work. It's an effort thing. And, I am more, I just don't see, Taylor being that guy. And so, I have a hard time seeing him make the roster.
I think so
you're
too.
You're right.
Yeah. It's a long
you're
shot.
Right though. In that if he doesn't make the team, what do you got? You've got, you know, Simeon Thomas, Derek Thomas, Devontae Davis, all these, you know,
right,
completely unknown, weren't even drafted guys. Although Simeon Thomas,
well, Simeon Thomas is another slot guy. So you've got Kalen Reed, Boykins, Thomas, Hakeem King, and you mentioned earlier, Griffin could all play the slot, you know, some of those in a pinch, but those are kind of all guys that could cover that spot a little bit. And then you've got, you mentioned Derek Thomas and Devontae Davis as two very raw, unproven guys. They were undrafted for a reason. They're not ready to play NFL football on Sundays yet, probably, unless one of them really turns out. But those are bigger guys. Those are outside corner guys. Both of them are like 6'2", 6'3", 200 pounds, long arms, you know, some length in there and so forth. But they're both developmental
projects. The reason why, like with Simeon Thomas, the one thing that I would give him is he's not a rookie. He's a guy that is, he's 25 and he's on the, well, was on the practice squad last year. So he knows the system. He's coming in with some system knowledge. He's also 6'3", and that helps, even though he's only 181. So he's skinny, but he's got that length. And this is, so he was, this is a guy that was a rookie last
sixth round pick out of in 2018 from Cleveland.
Yep. And then didn't make their roster, was waived. Seattle claimed them, then turned around and re-waived him, and then signed him to the practice squad. And so he's been on, you know, he was with the team last year, and that
he's
helps.
Been in the system, yeah, which helps him. Yep. Yeah, right.
So, he's a guy that you know, they know, a lot like Kalen Reed, and, you know, that gives him an opportunity. But, you know, me personally, I don't know who he is or what he is. I haven't seen him. He has been on the practice squad, and I don't get to see those practices. So, you know, we'll see what he is once training camp begins.
Yeah. So Derek Thomas, I'll just go through these couple guys that are left. Derek Thomas, 2019 undrafted free agent from Baylor, 6'3", 192 pounds, 33¾-inch arms, a 4'4", 40, 39½-inch vertical. Those are decent physical traits that Pete Carroll loves to develop, but he's very raw, and it will, he'll probably be on the practice squad. This is a guy that they'll want to keep around and develop, but he's going to start the year probably on the practice squad. Devontae Davis, 6'2", 202, ran a 4.57 40. He's got a little shorter arms, not quite the length and so forth, but he does have the athleticism, big physical kind of tackler. There was talk during the draft or in draft evaluations that he could move to strong safety in the NFL. So that is a possibility for him down the road. So they may want to keep him around a little bit just to see what he is and what he could bring. Other than that, that's the group. And I understand why you said at the beginning that this is the weakest link on the position groups on the defense. We got a couple of guys that are proven at the top. You know, we know Trey Flowers and Griffin are going to give you solid play in the NFL. Akeem King looks like a guy that could come in and actually really do a decent job. Beyond that, so that's the top three guys. And then we're going to have a couple other guys on the roster. And we've just got some question marks, you know, beyond the top three guys. Even Akeem King really has only played, you know, less than 100 snaps in the NFL overall. And he's had some special teams stuff. He's had some practice squad stuff, but that's what we're looking at. I mean, that to me is really the weakest position group on the entire team.
Yeah.
Even though there's upside, there's upside. No question.
There's lots of upside. And one of the things that we lose track of at times is, remember Byron Maxwell? And, you know, he was good and was the fourth member of the Legion of Boom for a while and then signed that big contract when he left and all of that. He was a guy that was drafted in the sixth round out of Clemson. He didn't even really play cornerback in Clemson. He was just an athlete who played a lot of special teams. And the Seahawks drafted him as a special teamer with the idea that they could develop him into a cornerback. And he spent a year and a half on the practice squad before getting a call-up and another chunk before he got a chance to actually play. And when he got a chance to play, he basically Wally Pipped Brandon Browner on a Super Bowl team. And, you know, so when you have guys that we don't know about, whether it be a Jeremy Boykins or a Simeon Thomas or a Devontae Davis, that doesn't mean you write them off and they're nothing, you know, because they're a practice squad guy. Who cares? The Seahawks have this history of taking these great athletes and turning them into good players at cornerback. A lot of that's Pete Carroll and Pete Carroll's system. Some of it was Chris Richard and his ability to teach individuals. And Chris Richard's now gone, so we'll see if that continues to translate. But, you know, I mean, but Pete Carroll is a defensive backs guy, and that's who he came up through the coaching ranks as a defensive backs coach. This is what he does, and I do think that there's a ton of upside. And as we said at the beginning, we only need one or two out of that list of like six guys to prove that they belong. And if one or two guys do, they'll be fine.
My bet is on Kalen Reed. My bet is that Kalen Reed comes out of nowhere and kind of stars for this team. And the reason that I think he stars is last year Coleman played 672 defensive snaps, 70% of all the snaps. And we got to replace that because mm-hmm. the team depends on those nickel corners now to really take a big chunk of those snaps. And I think the guy to watch is Kalen Reed.
And so Nobody knew who Justin Coleman was before the Seahawks traded a seventh round draft pick to New England for him. And he came in and became the starter at nickel and, you know, had a couple of really good years with Seattle before moving on to a big contract. And you know, and that's the type of thing that you know, Kalen Reed could definitely be that guy.
Safeties. We're going to move transition here to safeties. So we've got a couple of guys with decent experience at the top and then a whole bunch of question marks. So it's very similar to the corner group. The team is developing its position groups in both these categories. And so we've got a bunch of young, unproven talent.
The difference is who's the Trey Flowers of the safety group? Who's the one guy great year who's young and looks like they're breaking out and becoming a star? Who is that guy in the safety?
Well, he's a rookie.
The answer is no one. They don't have that guy.
It's a rookie. Marquise Blair. Marquise Blair is going to be that player, but we just haven't had a chance to see him yet because he's been a little injured. You're not showing out in rookie minicamps anyway. I think he's the guy that's going to come in and really have an impact. Now, the question is, what does that do to Bradley McDougald and Tedrick Thompson and so forth? So let's talk. Let's talk about it. So Bradley McDougald starts with this group. Might as well mention the vet guy up in the top, the best player of the group at this point. Bradley McDougal, very scheme diverse kind of guy. He's a little undersized at 6'1", 209, but he's just a solid NFL player. He's not going to make the Pro Bowl for you unless he ends up with seven interceptions or something. He does play the ball really well, but he's just one of those kind of solid NFL safeties that isn't extraordinary special, but is not going to hurt you on game day. He is scheme diverse, like I said. He prefers to play strong safety. He's actually come out and said that. I don't know if he said that on purpose with Pete Carroll in mind as his audience, but he can play free safety as well. He doesn't have the length and recovery speed to play free safety, I don't think, full-time, but he can play there. Last year, battled a partial torn patellar tendon during the second half of the 2018 season, but he played through it. So he's, you know, got to hand it to that. Other than that, Keith, why don't you can fill in the gaps and then you can talk about some other guys.
No, I think that's a good, he's the one player on in the safety position that you can describe as good, but he's not great. He's a very steady veteran presence and you need one, like I said, but he's the one guy you can count as good. The other starter would be Tedrick Thompson, who we've seen the last two seasons, and he's terrible. Was he better than Stephen Terrell, who was the guy there before as the backup to Earl Thomas? Yeah. Did it matter? Not really, because he was still bad enough that he made everyone else around him look worse. And he was the starter. And that will tell you a lot about where the safety position is.
And he's projected to be the starter going into this season.
Yeah. And if it's him and McDougald starting at safety, then either
with an unproven corner.
Yeah.
Back group.
Either he, you know, in the off season got cloned and became a, you know, genetic enhancement, became a different player, or this team's in trouble. At the safety position. And he's projected to be the starter. The next guy behind him was the guy that he was drafted with, was Delano Hill. Hill started as a strong safety. He's moved back and forth between strong and free. He's basically Bradley McDougal light in that. Yes. He can do both. He's also younger and a little quicker, a little bigger. So athletically he's there, but he just doesn't have that great feel for that McDougal has. But the upside's higher.
He doesn't have as good a ball skills.
Yeah. When Tedrick got hurt last year, Delano Hill came in and the defense actually got better with him. What they did was, rather than having Tedrick in the back and Bradley McDougal at strong safety up, you know, near the box most of the time, is they went to a more diverse system where sometimes it was McDougald in the back, sometimes it was Hill in the back, sometimes they both were back, sometimes they would line up equal and one of them would rush up right at the snap, and the other one would drop back. So it really confused teams, and it was more dynamic as far as what they could do, because you had a guy that could do both. I actually liked that, and I thought that was a great fit for the team's defense overall, and you saw that the team's defense got better with Hill. And I don't know if that's necessarily that he was a better player, but it was just that the scheme became better once they had that flexibility.
It's interesting, and you mentioned scheme with Tedrick Thompson. So Tedrick Thompson plays that single high safety. That's what he does, and he's not very good at it. He's not like, you know, Earl Thomas. But Tedrick Thompson, scheme-wise, is playing 20 yards off the line of scrimmage in the deep center outfield, and he reacts and tries to get to the ball. I mean, that's basically his job.
Yep, but he also can't tackle. He's one of the worst.
He's very poor tackler.
He's probably the worst tackler on the team.
Yeah, he takes bad angles. Mm-hmm. He takes bad coverage angles. Here's the deal. This offseason, Pete Carroll said that Thompson needs to play with more confidence. And if you read into that, it fits in perfectly with what we're seeing in the field. According to sources, and I say that loosely because I've read this somewhere, but I can't point it to a specific source. Thompson produces in practice, sees things well, but isn't reacting well enough in games. So game speed is the serious question mark, especially after 2 years in the league. And Pete's answer to that is he needs to play with more confidence, which translates to he needs to trust his play. He needs to trust what he's seeing, and he needs to react more instead of thinking more.
Well, he either needs to show that he can do that in the preseason games and play to what he shows in practice, or he needs to not be.
And what he showed in college. In college, he was a ball hawk. He had lots of interceptions. You know, some of those were gifts, but nonetheless.
He also couldn't tackle in college. But, you know what I mean? But so with him, like, in the preseason, either step up and play like you do in practice, or get off the field. Because having a guy who's great in practice and terrible in games will kill this team, because they need a playmaker at free safety. And if Thompson's not going to be that, they have other guys. They have Hill, who can play. They have the rookie who you mentioned earlier, who's the next guy on the list, Marquise Blair, whose athletic profile is that of a free safety, but he was a strong safety in
And Amadi, too. They got Amadi, too.
And
So let's go through the list. So let's start with Hill. You'd mentioned him. He had a cracked hip fracture last year, but he finished the season strong. In the month of December, he had 12 tackles, 2 quarterback hits, and a pass defense in the month of December. I thought he played his best football at the close of the season. And then he had the fracture, and that was the end of that. They shut him down. So there's promise with Hill. In the third year of a Pete Carroll secondary, I think Leno Hill can come out and really step up. The question is, what do you do with McDougald? McDougald wants to play strong safety. You got Hill there, and now they drafted Blair, who we'll talk about next. You know, there's only so many snaps. So we'll see what they do as far as moving guys around, scheme oriented, and as well as reacting to what the offense is doing. Mm-hmm. What personnel the offense has on the board will dictate maybe when some of these guys take their snaps. And then you got a guy like Marquise Blair, who I missed in the draft, to be completely honest. I looked at guys, and he just wasn't one of the guys that stood out to me that would be kind of the Seahawks-oriented type player. But then after they drafted him and you really took a look at what he was known for, his physicality and his meanness on the field, if you will, I just discounted him a little bit based on his size. It's at 194 pounds. He does have some length and so forth, and some scheme diversity, but I was looking for a true strong safety guy in that spot, and he just didn't come up for me. What are your thoughts on Marquise Blair? How does he fit as a rookie, and does he at all see the field this year?
I think he does. So athletically, he looks like a free safety. His height, weight, speed, agility. He's a guy that you'd think would come in and push Tedrick off the roster and become the starting free safety day one.
I'm literally crossing my fingers as you're talking.
But then you go watch his tape and you say, no, that's not who he is. This is a guy.
He's a downhill player.
This is a guy that he basically plays like Cam Chancellor in Earl Thomas's body. Let's put it that way.
That's very good.
He wants to kill people. He wants to like just level people out. He kept getting personal fouls for, you know, hitting or targeting, you know, calls against him because he would just go in and try and take someone's head off. The team actually liked that physicality, the fact that he loves football, he loves hitting people. The Seahawks loved that about him. Other teams.
His defensive coordinator at Utah said he was the most violent player he'd ever seen play the game.
Yeah. And, most teams like didn't they counted that against him because they're like, oh, he plays out of control and whatnot. But
we had a player like this in our past, Ken Hamlin.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Hamlin was known for one thing, that was hitting people.
He was the hammer,
right? Headhunter, the hammer. That was his nickname. But he wasn't. He was an okay football player. Like, he was an okay football player that could hit people, like, with a ton of bricks. My question mark to Marquise Blair is he a good football player, and will he hold up in the NFL?
Yeah, the will he hold up in the NFL, I think, is, you know, that's something we can't answer. I mean, there are people who are built bigger, stronger than him that have not been able to, and there are people who are, you know, his size or a little smaller that have had long careers. So we won't.
Well, before Earl Thomas, you know, had that 2-3 year run of injuries, Earl Thomas played his first 5-6 years in the NFL pretty much injury free. Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, it really comes down to what you're looking at. We don't know. We don't know what it's going to be. We also don't really, you know, we don't really know how the team's going to use him. I like Marquise Blair because of his scheme diversity, because he can play strong safety, but he's built like a free safety.
I'm excited, and actually, the idea to that see they can him move play. Him,
do what they did with Delano Hill and McDougald last year, where they have that, you don't know who's playing free safety and who's playing strong safety on any snap because of the way they can line up even and one drop back at the snap and one come forward, and it can be either guy. And the fact that you've got three guys now that can do that, so you can have that as that being part of your scheme that you build in and you just go for it, I think is important. And I think that it's when they drafted Blair early, he was like that's what it told me, was that they want to stick with what they did at the end of the year last year with when they had Hill in there.
Yeah. Well, and another guy that we'll mention right now, Ugo Amadi, gives you the same sort of scheme diversity.
But it's a different kind.
Here's a guy
for him, is not a
it's
strong
a different
safety.
Kind. Right. So it's free safety and nickel.
And nickel corner.
Right. But the way that Seattle plays this defense, you could see him playing what looks like some sort of, you know, strong safety role or free safety nickel linebacker-ish kind of hybrid guy back there. In fact, Amadi is what I thought they would do with Shaquem Griffin.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the right idea, except for that Griffin's never had to cover in that way, where he's just one-on-one on a slot receiver. He's
true, but he'd be one-on-one with a tight end, though.
Yeah, sometimes.
And a running back.
And which I think he could do, but they want to see him rushing the passer more and doing some of those things. Amadi, though, gives them that free safety possibility, the slot corner. I think he plays into both position groups when it comes time to actually setting the roster, because he can do both. And
how does that impact the corner evaluations?
Well, I think that,
like, his ability to play nickel.
Well, his ability to play nickel, I don't think you're looking at him as a starting nickel, at least not early, maybe down the road. But he does play him because you can count him as the sixth corner and the fifth,
yes,
and the fifth safety, and therefore, you know what I, yes, mean, and be both. and so I think that actually, you know, will help him make the roster, help the team out in terms of its numbers.
Might help Nico Thorpe make the roster.
Yeah. I do think a guy like Amadi needs a little bit of time. I don't think we should be counting on him to come in week one and be an impact player, I think, is not fair to him and not setting
he
him
came
up.
Into Oregon and was an impact player from day one there too, played 4 years, team captain, Lombardi Award winner in 2018. He's got punt return ability, mm-hmm, which could be interesting, actually.
Yeah, because
the team's talked about moving now from Tyler Lockett as a punt returner.
Well, now that Lockett's the number one receiver, you don't want your number one receiver,
right,
back, because there's a lot of injuries and a lot of wear and tear on a player who's doing kick and punt returns. So now if you can have Lockett not do that and have another guy with that kind of ability to, you know, make a big play in special teams like Amadi, I think the team would really, really want to not have Lockett in that role. Maybe if it's late in the game in a fourth quarter and you need a spark because you're behind type of thing, yeah, then you let Lockett run one back then. But for the most of the time, you know, you don't want him in there. And so having a guy like Amadi would be great.
So 80%, 764 defensive snaps as a senior came from the slot corner role for Amadi at Oregon. So, I mean, that ability is there. I know that Pete said they want to look at him at free safety first, but they immediately looked at him as slot as well at minicamp. So
Yep. They
didn't waste a lot of time looking at him. So for me, it might be a situation where it's hard to keep a guy like Amadi off the field just because he's such a good football player. He's got good ball skills. He's got excellent wingspan for his height. He's a leadership guy. He's an alpha dog in the locker room, which is what, you know, both if you look at Blair and Amadi, that could be the future of the safety position in Seattle, in my personal opinion.
The Seahawks so close that when they drafted both of them in the same year.
I would think. I mean, it looks like it, you know. I think the team is ready to move on from Tedrick Thompson, but I don't think it's necessarily will be this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it could be next year.
I hope I hope you're wrong on that. So there are a couple other guys that we should probably talk about when it comes to safety. The first one is a guy they traded for last year, gave up practically nothing for, with Oakland. If I remember right, it's a 7th round pick. Shalom Luani, a Washington State player.
All Pac-12 in 2016.
Yeah, a very good... very good player.
Here's another scheme diverse guy.
Yeah, too. A very good player in terms of, like, you know, special teams and that kind of stuff. That's about what he's known for. Actually looked good when he had to play some last year after the injuries to Hill and Thompson. You know, not a guy necessarily that you're looking at to be a, you know, an impact guy, but
he's not a starter. He's not going to be a starter, but he's going to, he could fill in for a game on with an injury. He's a guy that could come in and play some snaps in the three, you know, safety, third safety type of situation. Did you know one thing about Luani that nobody probably really knows? He was a standout star soccer player for the American Samoan national soccer team.
I did not know that.
I know. Crazy.
I wonder if he could be our backup. I wonder if he's the backup kicker.
That's funny.
If something would happen to Myers, yeah, and he would get hurt. If you bring in Luani to kick.
So who else do we got? So we got Marwin Evans and Jalen Harvey. Like, I've never heard of either one of those guys, but, you know, one of those guys, Evans, has got a little bit more more experience.
Yeah, I guess I don't know.
So Marvin Evans, 6'1", 194 pounds, 4'4", 40, 42-inch vertical, which points to some athleticism there. He's more of a strong safety type. Special teams guy, played in 16 games of each of 2016 and 17 for Green Bay on special teams. Signed to the practice squad on January 1st, right before the playoffs. He's known to be a great tackler. He actually had a 2016 minicamp invite as an undrafted free agent with Seattle before signing with the Packers in 2016. So that's what I know about Marwin Evans. So he's more of a special teams kind of guy. Jalen Harvey, 6'1", 200 pounds, undrafted free agent. For 1 year experience at safety at Arizona State. 3 years of experience at wide receiver. So he's only coming off 1 year of experience as a safety in college and trying to make it as a safety in the NFL. 53 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 1 forced fumbles. 3 years as a wide receiver, he had 33 receptions, 558 yards, and a TD. And that was just his junior year. So that's it's a project. So that guy's a project. So, in fact, he's, you know, based on just that, I would say he's probably one of the most likely players to be cut.
Yeah, probably
out of training.
Probably.
Camp.
I would.
So that's your secondary, Keith. I mean, what are your thoughts overall? We mentioned a lot of names. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of upside on some younger guys. But the whole unit as a whole is really got a lot of question marks and unproven ability.
Yeah, I mean, this cornerbacks and safeties is, you know, the weak link on the team. This is the group that if the Seahawks...
Is it any weaker than it was last year? I mean, we did come into the year with Earl Thomas.
We came into the year with Earl Thomas, and we came into the year with...
But we played most of the year without.
And we came into the year with Justin Coleman.
That is the big hit.
I mean, when you come into the year with Tedrick Thompson as your presumed starter, that is less than ideal. So...
Well, that's before training camp. A lot can happen.
I know.
You know, if the team looks like they could go with Amadi, they'll go with Amadi. you know, or Marquise Blair, one of the two, or maybe a combination of both those guys, depending on personnel, to force Tedrick Thompson off the field. I mean, that would be great. Ideally, I think the team and Pete Carroll are looking at Tedrick Thompson and going, you know what? If that guy can just turn the corner, this defense would be okay. And so they may be counting on Tedrick Thompson to actually take a step up this year. And if there's an most unlikely guy on the team to do it, it would be him. But if he actually did, I'm not going to be a hater. I mean, I would love to see a guy like Tedrick Thompson be able to take that step and kind of be a ball hawk like he used to be and really have confidence in his game and shut down that back third. I mean, is it possible? Yeah. Is it probable? No. But it doesn't look like the team's ready to move on from him yet.
We'll see.
Which gives me slight hope in a sense.
It actually, to me, it doesn't, because I think what you have...
Why didn't they draft a free safety, Keith, if they knew all this shit was going down? Excuse my French.
Because I think it's the way the draft fell. And I think they know they've got guys like McDougald and Hill that they're...
They chose to go in a different direction and drafted Blair in the second round. They could have drafted Deontay Thompson or whatever out there, a couple other free safety options that were available. Adderley, possibly, and
I don't know.
There's a couple of the guys that we had our eye on.
It might be Tedrick who is the guy, the reason why they didn't draft a free safety. And if that's true, it doesn't give me confidence, because it doesn't. What I've seen from Tedrick over since he joined the Seahawks out of the draft is a guy that plays slow, takes bad angles, and doesn't. And doesn't tackle. And yes, he's got the speed. It's there, but it doesn't show up on tape. And so the team sees it in practice. They're like, wow, this guy's great in practice, but terrible in games. We just need him to put it together. And if they're counting on him to make that jump and not hedging by getting another player in there who can compete with them, I think that sets them up to have a player who continues to make plays in practice, but not in games.
Maybe the team did feel like they did hedge by drafting Blair and Amadi, in that they didn't draft specific, I can only play free safety type of player. They played some scheme diverse players there. They drafted scheme diversity instead of another Tedrick Thompson.
Because if you go and draft early a designated free safety, then that's showing that you've either completely given up on Tedrick, or you have a situation where your pick may never see the field.
Right. Well, and here's the thought. I think they really like Bradley McDougald, and they value Bradley McDougald's diversity, and they drafted two more Bradley McDougalds. Essentially, mm-hmm. Marquise Blair and Amadi can play both, and
they've already got,
depending on how
Delano Hill, who showed last year, because he came in as a pure strong safety, and then last year he played free safety.
We drafted Earl Thomas at the top end of the draft. You know, when he was drafted, he was a first round pick, number 12 or 13, 14, 15 overall, or whatever it was. In order to get another Earl Thomas like player out of college, you would have to draft in the top half of the draft to get a player of that sort of quality. I'm not saying you're going to replace Earl Thomas, or a player drafted that high is going to be like Earl, but you're not going to have a chance to draft an Earl Thomas in the second or third round. It's just not going to happen. So maybe the team is waiting for that opportunity, or waiting for that right player to come along. In the meantime, they go with players like Blair and Amadi and McDougald and Hill, who they can switch around, and they scheme their defense to take advantage of those sorts of traits.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
I mean, and that's what it kind of comes down to, is I just don't know. I don't have faith that Tedrick Thompson's going to be the guy. I just don't. And
you
so
and me both.
And so for that, I am very concerned that the team, because of what they see in practice, expect him to be the guy. But then when it actually comes time, out there on the field, he's going to continue to be Tedrick Thompson.
I would think if that's the situation, I would think that the leash would be much, much smaller than it was in any other year. Although they would have to count on a couple of rookies to come in and step up into that role and do the job. And you're hoping, as I do, that one of those two would be able to do that as the season progresses. So that you start the season with Tedrick Thompson, but you end the season with Blair Armati paired with McDougald. That would be my best guess as to how this would go down. Or Hill. Hill's coming off that hip injury. We'll see how that impacts him. But yeah, anyway, that's it. I mean, that's our secondary, folks. We've got, you know, probably five pretty good players overall that are going to be on the field at any one time. But the depth beyond that is
it's very really questionable. But there's a lot of upside, a lot of youth, a lot of upside. And it's one of those things where we hope someone will pan out and be a good player.
And we were a 10-win team last year with this basically the same secondary minus Coleman. Now, granted, Coleman played a big role, had a lot of snaps, but hopefully out of the tens of players we just mentioned, somebody will step up into that role. I mean, you're going to give more time to Hakeem King. To me, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You're going to have Kalen Reed needs to step up, or Jeremy Boykins, or one of those, or Jamar Taylor. One of those three has probably got to step up into a starting role and take serious minutes and be good. I'm counting on Reed just because of some of the background I've done on him and read about him and so forth. I think Matty Brown over at Field Goals did a really nice film breakdown of Kalen Reed's game, and it was very intriguing, like the film study that he put together. So I would recommend folks go and take a look at that. That's it. I think we'll wrap the show for now. What do you got, Keith? Anything else?
No, I think it's been a good series, a good month, four shows on the roster and what we're looking at. And there's a lot of youth, a lot of upside, a lot of unknowns all the way around. But what it shows us, you know, after 4 weeks is that this is a team on the upswing, not a team in the downswing. Yeah, it's going to be hard to replace all the guys they've lost, from Bennett Naverl to Thomas and Chancellor and Sherman and all of that. But the team has gone young. They've gone talented, maybe not. They've gone with upside. And now it's just a matter of turning all that upside into production.
Yeah, they've gone with locker room guys. They've gone with core kind of quality leadership guys, more alpha dogs. They're trying to rebuild what they've had in the past.
Yeah.
And we knew this transition was going to take a little bit.
And I think that overall, what you see is more depth and like more unknowns at the top, because we just don't know yet because the team's so young, but better depth. When it was Earl Thomas and then his backup was Steve Terrell, you had the best safety in the game backed up by someone who didn't really belong in the NFL. And they don't have that anymore. Now they've got a lesser player at the top, but you've got three or four players pushing them for minutes. And that is, it's a different approach and one that is underappreciated. Like having that kind of depth wins in the NFL.
Yeah, and they did that on the defensive line too, Keith, and they have that at the linebacker spot. I mean, the depth at linebacker is the best that we've had in years.
Yeah.
You know, and at safety, you're right. At the top, it's a fairly light roster, including the corners as well. But the depth hopefully is there, and some players are interchangeable, and we're less susceptible to injury and all that kind of stuff. And we're more scheme diverse. We have players that play multiple positions and so forth. Our offense is kind of set. Our offense is kind of about the same as it was last year. Minus Doug Baldwin, obviously that's a big hit. We need to find some production there. But overall though, I think we're better. We have a better wide receiver core coming in overall than we did before. We just need to find out who's going to step up and be a star. Yeah. And that happens every year in the NFL. You know, somebody steps up. That's the way it works. So we'll see. It's exciting. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a good year. I don't see us being any less than we were last year as a whole. Certain positions are less, but others are better.
Yep. Last year was a 10-win team. The team overachieved a little bit last year. This year, they've got a fairly rough schedule, and if they, I think saying that, oh, they were a 10-win team and they improved, now they're going to be 11 or 12 win. I think you can improve and still be a 10-win team. And because of the way the schedule works and that kind of stuff. So I think that that's kind of where we're looking. I like the depth. And I know I just said that, but I'm going to say it again. I like the depth on this roster. And I think that all of it put it together.
It'll help us in the long run.
Yep.
Yeah. It'll help us in the long run. We've got $23 million left of cap this year. Some of that, probably at least half, if not slightly more, will roll into next year. Next year's cap is at $75 million currently, one of the largest cap numbers in the entire NFL. Mm-hmm. And we have 11 draft picks, including first rounder, 2 seconds, 2/3, fourths, that sort of thing. I mean, it's going to be one of these deals where whatever we can get out of this year is all building towards, I think, what it all comes together next year. Next year's draft class, to me, plus you take a look at that salary cap availability, we could get a couple of like key free agents. You're going to have a hard time seeing the field as a rookie next year, I think. It's just going to be one of those deals where the roster just all comes together. And now you've got all this experience. All these rookies we're talking about now are second-year players. Are going to have that extra year, that extra time. Man, that's going to be where it's at. This year, it's unproven. Now, they could go win 13 games, or they could fall back a little bit and win 8 or 9. I don't see that happening, but it could happen, depending on whether or not our players, you know, that need to step up do step up. If it's kind of flat, then we may not. But I have a lot of hope. So anyway, next week we'll do the kind of the NFL show, if you will, the commissioner show. And then the following week, it'll be a question and answer show and then a training camp preview show. So we hope you'll come back and join us for the next 3 shows. In the meantime, you can follow Keith on Twitter at MyersNFL. I'm at NWCHawk. The show is at Hawks Playbook. And at HawksPlaybook.com, you'll find all of the shows archived, every one that we've done. We're up to 122 shows, consecutive shows, I might add now. And you can subscribe on iTunes and subscribe on Google Podcasts or any other podcast app that you favor. So until next time, Keith, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hey, Hawks fans. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio and listen to all of our shows on HawksPlaybook.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Hawks Playbook. Bill is at NWCHawk and Keith is at MyersNFL.